This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Oh, hi. It's episode 102, which is less fun than 100, or 101. Are there any fun musical devices with 102 in the name?
Not that I can think of. Plenty of 101s.
Ooh, the SH. Love it. But yes, 102, and of course, the episode numbers will be much less exciting, but steadily climbing. Welcome, listeners, back again to a music and technology podcast. You have Ben. Hello. And you've got Pete as well. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Lovely stuff. If you're new here, we kick off with a bit of a what you been doing this week. If I may go first, Pete. I've been doing some miniature painting, which is satisfying, though I do need to fix my posture. Because they're so small, fine detail work. I've sort of got this posture like this, where my neck is completely bent over forwards, and I need to figure out a less damaging way.
What type of miniatures are you painting?
So, like many people, I started in the realm of Games Workshop's Warhammer Rangers. But I have ordered a few from the myriad of Etsy sellers who will send you 3D printed minis from all these new... What's the, you know, the one with the vat of resin, kind of lift stuff out of the resin?
3D printers.
Yeah, not the kind of extrudey spaghetti ones, but the...
Yeah, those. They've got a laser underneath that's you're fusing it.
Yeah, so that's very popular at the moment. Lots of people making those and sending minis. But I've just been enjoying a different creative thing to do.
What are the characters that you're painting? What sort of style? Are they sort of Lord of the Rings type things or sci-fi or...
Games Workshop has lots. They have a fantasy, they have a sci-fi, and they also do Lord of the Rings. I've mostly done sci-fi stuff just because that's what interested me.
So a Warhammer type thing.
Yes, I did pick up some orc things just because I wanted something different to paint rather than suits of armour. Try and practice my flesh painting. Very satisfying. Though, yes, posture is a problem.
Yeah, I can see that. Back in the day...
When
I used to do it, we had several. So the manufacturer Airfix, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them.
I did have an Airfix phase. I do enjoy a bit of Airfix.
I don't know if they still do them. I know they still do all the models, but they used to do little... Well, they 1/16th. I don't know what scale, the tiny...
Not really familiar with what...
Scale.
Yeah, I don't have a good eye for scales.
But they used to do packs. I can't remember how many used to get in each pack. They were relatively inexpensive, and they would have anything from Roman army through to Napoleonic to Second World War. And I should really get it out. I've got a big tub of them in the loft still. Yeah. I mean, I used to paint those, but not very well. Then I progressed to the equivalent of the 3D, but in those days it was cast lead.
Oh yeah, gotcha. No, I think most of the time if it's metal it's pewter, I think, these days. But there's still lots of metal miniatures about.
Is pewter quite soft?
I think so, yeah. There was always the tendency to, you know, get out your new warrior that you've just bought and the sword is a bit of a banana.
Bit droopy.
Yeah.
So again, before you leave, I'll show you...
Oh, yeah.
I've got a little box of almost like trinkets, but there's some remnants from, I don't know, 45 plus years ago.
Airfix still going strong.
Well, yeah.
Thankfully, though, although they are adorable, those teeny tiny little paint cans that you get, because those are enamel paints, so you'd have to use thinners and things. These days, it's normally water-based acrylics, which makes it a little bit
easier. It's all safe.
Easier.
No, we had all the stinky stuff that you're most probably getting all sorts of gas, noxious chemicals coming off them.
Delicious fumes.
They've all been banned now.
Yeah, but one thing I am awaiting a shipment from Etsy is a couple of figures which are, well, they're not the spacesuits from the Alien franchise. For legal reasons, they're definitely not related to anything of Ridley Scott cinematography at all. But they might look a bit similar. But I'm quite excited for those, so I'm going to try and paint them up in that same way. Obviously, having seen Adam Savage's spacesuit that he's made, try and copy that scheme.
So once they're all painted up, do you display them, or what do you do with them?
I don't really do much other than, display them, because at the moment it's just the process of painting that I enjoy. But those two, I got two of those alien spacesuit things, the human spacesuits from the Alien first Alien film. Those are going to be replacing the little cardboard counters from a board game that my partner and I play, because there's so many flat cardboard counters in that game that it's very easy to lose where you left yours. So a little figure will help that immensely.
How do you think they'll tolerate the handling once you've had they'll be all painted up?
You have to go for a clear coat afterwards, otherwise...
That'll preserve them.
Yeah, if you prime them and then paint them, they're normally pretty good. But of course, if you're going to be using them for board game purposes, definitely a clear coat is the way forwards.
Do you get involved in any other sort of modelling at all?
I said I had the Airfix phase, but that's kind of it. But I've always enjoyed building things, various forms. Lego was a huge thing when I was younger, and Airfix kits, definitely. Warhammer was quite early on as well, and then there's a big gap before, maybe between year six and sometime in uni, where I wasn't really doing any of that kind of thing, but got back into it recently. Just satisfying. I like making things. I'd forgotten that I liked making things for a good 5 or 6 years.
It's very cathartic.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd love to get more into the kind of woodwork sort of thing that you've got the space for, but it's not apartment friendly. Unfortunately.
No, I can totally understand. And the noise, I was doing something, I think I was just drilling or cutting. I was doing something motorized, and then I realized, oh, it's 11:30 at night. I don't think that, I mean, although I'm doing it within my own premises, I'm just wondering how much of that was escaping and being experienced by the neighbors.
Yeah, I've made a couple of little tools for my espresso making, which I just got a pack of exotic wood blanks for making pens. So they're, a couple of centimetres square, and they'll just be, 10, 15 centimetres long, nice woods, padauk, mahogany, walnut and such. Got a few of those that I've sliced up and rounded off with some sandpaper, but that's about as far as I can really go in a flat.
I hadn't realised until recently that making pens was a thing, and then...
No, I didn't know at all until I wanted to get some nice bits of wood and then realised that was how you did it. Pen blanks. I don't think I've ever held a wooden pen.
Possibly. I use a tool retailer, or machine tool retailer, called Axminster Tools, where I've bought a lot of the workshop equipment from, and they have all sorts of supplies, let's say, for craft purposes. Yeah. So they have large, knotty lumps of wood for making bowls or turning bowls. Yeah. And that's where I witnessed they had a whole selection of pen blanks and that type of thing, all the bits and pieces.
Is it sort of fountain pens? You'll get the bit that the nib sits in and wherever the ink cartridge is, and then you just sort of fashion the barrel and the lid or something?
That's what it seemed to be. They had a selection of pre-done barrels where I would imagine you put them onto a small lathe and turn them or do something or polish them up.
Imagine that's quite satisfying.
That's a thing then.
That is a thing people do. But yes, what about your week? What have you been up to? I might have seen some evidence of it perhaps earlier.
Yes, the case is proceeding. I've had to order some more bits and pieces, and we're now firmly in the Christmas delivery area where things are taking sort of twice as long to arrive. So it's all slowed down. But my optimistic prediction is that the case will be 100% complete by next week.
Awesome.
So for a big reveal.
Delicious. Tell us all about that special paint, because that was really cool. I didn't know that was a thing,
yes,
but it makes sense.
Most probably you will recall I was contemplating using Tolex to cover it, and I'd watched numerous videos on YouTube with people applying Tolex to amp cabinets and speaker cabinets and et cetera, and it all looked quite good, but there's the situation where you have to deal with seams.
Yeah, it's probably one where experience comes in handy to get that right.
Well, in some cases, they either kind of knit the seams very close together or they use piping.
Ah, is that just glued on?
Yes, I believe it is, just to mask the seam. But I thought, I don't really want to go in that direction. And then sort of had a bit of a light bulb moment and remembered the textured paint that a lot of speaker manufacturers use for their cabinets. And did some sort of research on what was available and then found that was a product that I have ordered from Germany, which hopefully will arrive before the end of the week. Also has to be applied with special kind of crispy, spongy rollers. That's the only way I can describe them, really.
So is it that there's a particulate suspended in the paint that provides that texture, or is it quite a thick paint and you create the texture with the roller and it kind of fixes like that?
I am not sure until I endeavour to apply it. It could be either or, but the rollers that you use also create a lot of the kind of bobbly texture.
I'm thinking of that noise you get when you're using a roller to paint walls, that lovely kind of...
sort of sucking sound.
Yeah, it's sucking and kind of crispy, that... we know it. I can't describe it. You can't describe sound. We know the one.
Yes, I think it's just that the sort of viscosity of the paint is so glutinous that it just lends itself to the... that finish. Basically, I saw people applying the paint using spray guns, and it was still sort of bobbly after the fact. So there's some...
special nozzle probably needed so it doesn't clog
potentially
up, maybe.
There is a quality to the paint.
And stay tuned, we'll hear how it goes. Awesome. Looking forward to it. We've got some news this week. I don't know if you heard about this one and just didn't... well, heard about this through the shop, potentially, and just didn't really care, because I see why you wouldn't. You know, the SSL Big Six.
There has been some discussion in store about it.
It passed me by because I'm not in the shop anymore. Hooray! I mean, oh no. But I think it's quite cool. If you don't know, listeners, SSL, Solid State Logic, from England, Oxfordshire, somewhere, they have a little teeny tiny analog mixer called the SSL 6, which annoyed me quite a lot when it came out, because it's only got two channels with preamps on them, sort of a couple of stereo channels, a really, really cut down bus compressor, and that was kind of it. And I sort of struggled to see that many people would really want to use it, because it's not got that much flexibility as a summing mixer, as a normal desktop analog mixer, also air. But now they have the Big Six, which is much more like it. It is, unfortunately, 2,000 or something. Thomann, I think this is including VAT, they have it at £2,480. So it's a big chunk of mixing desk. But it's kind of more what I'd want if I had the cash for a small format SSL analog situation.
So compressors on the channel strips, I believe.
And that then, it do.
But, and also a master bus compressor as well, is that correct?
Yes, and it's still the same annoyingly cut down one where the only controls you have are threshold and makeup, but supposedly based on the same circuitry. But yes, on each channel you've got you've got an in and a threshold control, but you've got a compressor per channel, which is cool. You also get 3-band EQ, which is way more useful than the, I think it's just low and high shelves that you've got on the tiny mixer, the SSL6, and you can switch those, the high and the low, from shelf to bell, which is pretty cool. You've got 4 stereo channels to play with as well, a couple of sends, and the whole thing is a 16 by 16 digital audio interface, which I think is brilliant. So it just fits in that hybrid workflow way better than its tiny baby brother does. It's cooler. I'm just happy that it exists. I will never have one, because why would I be able to afford such a thing? But it makes me happy. Thank you, SSL. Hooray. You kind of wanted a Fusion at one point, didn't you?
I was contemplating about it, but I've heard sort of negative reports about it, saying that it wasn't that impressive.
I think Andy might have heard one at one point when we were first talking about it way back when, and kind of wasn't a fan.
Yes. He has access to lots of separates, lots of nice outboard, but that's another hole I don't want to fall down.
It can be a way to go. Next bit of news. Most unfortunately, Moog has discontinued the Werkstatt, or the Werkstatt, or the Werkstatt, or the Werkstatt, or however you want to pronounce it, because who really cares at this point? But, yeah, it's a shame, actually, because it's their most affordable analog machine, or it was, and it's gone. And it's also a bit of a modular gateway thing, because it's got that expander for CV control.
So when they had the expander they had recently, when they were re-promoting it, was that just... I think that was just a last hurrah, just a quick push before
they
end-of-lifed it.
Yeah, maybe some leftover chassis and things. So when it was first released, it was just breadboard patch cables on the right-hand side, and then they just made this that you kind of plug in. I don't know if it was the original one, but it was from the Moog Fest, what do they call it, the Engineers Pass or something? I think it was one of the first ones of those they did, because it was kind of a kit, you build it yourself. I say you build it yourself, you solder the front panel bits on, that's kind of it. One thing that annoyed me about the Engineers Passes when they did that's when they first did the Mother 32, the DFAM, the Subharmonicon, and the Spectravox, I think. You think, oh yeah, you're going to go and solder one together at Moog or whatever. All you do is solder the front panel components and calibrate it with them. I imagine there's a lot of people that would really like to actually get into the nitty-gritty of building a synthesizer at Moog. but it's very, very basic. Rant over. I'm sad that the little thing has gone. Super basic and, you know, one oscillator, filtery thing. But it was cheap and it was nice. Here's a thing that we can revisit that we haven't spoken about for a while. We do like Dreadbox here, and there is a Loopop video of the Nymphs, or Nymphies, I think it's just Nymphs, maybe Nymphus, whatever, we never figured it out. Either way, Loopop's done his thing, his videos are great, we know the stuff, but it just means we've heard more of it now. And yeah, I still stand by my excitement about it when we first took a look. I think it sounds cool. And should I buy a polysynth once more, it is at the top of my list. Big fan. Have you watched the video?
Yes, I have. I don't think I watched
about it.
Yeah, I did have to think about it. I don't think I watched it all the way through. It is interesting, sort of now realising from that video that the sliders are multifunctional. They have a secondary function, don't
yes.
they? So, because I'm finding with the Typhon that mm-hmm. although it sounds great, it's hard to get inside it because of the lack of control surface, because that's where they've optimized it to save cost.
Yeah. This one is marginally better, though the menu system is still a little cumbersome, for example. But you have a little legend on the bottom right where you have your slightly deeper controls, and it does involve kind of reading a table, tapping some buttons, tapping it again, dialing a thing. It's not that quick and easy as it could be with a tiny little screen encoder and a thing. But yeah, cost saving and no screens get the thumbs up in my opinion, but it could definitely be easier.
There was one thing that put a bit of shade on it for me, and that is I hadn't realised that the output is mono.
It is a big shame.
Yeah, and that's, I suddenly thought,
add a bit of stereo delay and then reverb and you can help it a bit, but yes, that it be.
So again, sort of major cost cutting. I know it's, well, it's not that cheap, is it?
Let's find out. From a friendly neighbourhood UK retailer, 459. Yeah, 459 great British squids. I'm going to quickly do the old sort price low to high and refresh myself and see what's in that category.
Well, a DeepMind 6.
Yeah, but that has the word Behringer on it.
I know, but it's still a six-voice polyphonic synth. It's stereo. It's got wireless built-in Wi-Fi. It's got four layers of digital effects. It sounds great. To be honest, I think I'd have a DeepMind 6 hands down over it if it was it came down to a choice.
This is the ballpark. So, Minilog, the original, four voices, also mono, analog delay, 428. And then on this particular retailer, DeepMind 6 at, currently at 440, normally 489. Nymphs, 459, as I just mentioned. Ooh, then you're going to hit the modal stuff for a smidge more at 497. Those are a lot of synths.
The Cobalt.
Cobalt and the other one.
Again, they sound great.
They do. Obviously nowhere near as juicy should you want the jus, but yeah. Yeah, tougher sell.
I know they're almost a boutique manufacturer in some respects.
They are.
And it does sound good.
And it is small.
Yes, very small.
Tricky.
I haven't realised the Minilog was...
The original one was the Minilog XD. You can get the module at 499. Again, four voices, but that is stereo.
Okay.
Only effects.
But the original wasn't?
No.
Okay. I haven't noticed. All these years I've been selling them, I've never noticed that they're actually mono.
Well, it was just an analog delay, so there's no point. And only four voices... panning them doesn't really help too much.
I suppose so. It's just I'm so used to using headphones, but I suppose it's just sending the same signal to each ear.
Yes, indeed. I think... actually, let me retract that earlier statement, listeners. I think probably a Cobalt is probably up the top for me, the module.
Yeah.
Because it's still very, very small, and they do sound very, very good. Tricky stuff.
The Nymphs... Nymphi?
Nymphs.
Nymphs.
Nymphs. Just call it Nymphs.
The Nymphs is 100% analog.
It is, yeah. 100% digital on the modal end.
And the original Minilog is analog.
True.
And the XD is obviously a hybrid.
Yeah, modal for me. I'll stick by it.
I'm still sticking with the DeepMind.
Fair enough.
How many synths are actually mono in reality, and it's only once you pass them through any onboard effects that stereo is kind of added.
I suppose you can find out just by going through the menu and looking for a voice panning feature.
I suppose it's a bit like the re-release of the Prophet 5. They didn't They've kept it mono.
Yeah. We've already ranted about the Prophet 5,
haven't
we? I
know, but it's a not stereo, very expensive synth.
Yeah. I'll never get over the fact they didn't do a dual manual version. Maybe that'll be an anniversary edition. The Prophet 10. It'd be hilarious.
What the... Yeah, but I don't regard the current Prophet 10 as a... It's a Prophet 5 with 10 voices. It's
exactly,
not a,
yeah.
It's not a Prophet 10.
And it never will be. I had something to say, but I've forgotten it. That's really annoying me now. Damn.
About synths?
I don't know. I've totally forgotten.
I hate when that happens.
All sense of what it might have been has completely gone out the window.
Yeah, welcome to my world. All the time. I go into a room and don't even know why I'm there.
Ah, yes. Part of the weekly update that I totally forgot. Two parts. One would be we had another big modcaf in the big room and Pete was there and it was amazing. And none of it's on YouTube or SoundCloud at the moment because I haven't got around to it yet. YouTube.com/C/modcaf. You'll find it there. That's MODCAF. And there's going to be some good stuff soon. But more importantly, if you go back, what episode did we have Ian on? Was it 96? 95?
I would have to look.
Ooh, that's a bit annoying. But Ian, who came on the podcast a while ago, and we interviewed him from Void Null, the live AV duo, they had a show in Alton, a small community centre in Alton, which is a very strange venue. But it was joyous. Last time I went to see them was in the West End Centre with Luke in a weird, I think it was in that semi-unlocking we had between those two big lockdowns last year or something like that. All track of time is completely gone, but we were all seated, distanced, and it was really quiet, and it didn't kind of work, and I wasn't too happy with it. They weren't too happy with it, but they have absolutely outdone themselves. I've said a couple of times before, potentially on the podcast, that their first show that I saw a couple of times was my favourite. It was about the heat death of the universe, that theory, or probably a relatively accepted theory at this point. Either way, it was about, you know, what's going to happen at the end of the universe. And you had this, it was an existential crisis in a live show. And it was brilliant. I loved it. The sound design just worked. I haven't written anything down, so I'm not going to have the best words to describe it. But this new show, I think they just call it Collapse, which is about black holes and going through or into or out of black holes. And yes, let me actually grab my phone because I sent Ian a message. What did I say? Yes, so it was a step up on both fronts of the A and the V, the audio and the visual. James, who does the visuals, everything had just a bit more crispness. It was sharper. There were a few elements that I kind of recognised from previous shows that kept it feeling really Void Null, but lots of new elements in there as well. It just looks stunning. They must have a really expensive, nice projector because it was really sharp. And on the audio side, it was punchier, it was angrier, it had a bit more cohesion in, is not a story in that way, but the words that they were, the ideas that they were illustrating, I don't know, the concepts that they were musicking about knitted together very well, and the music supported that knitting perfectly. There were quite a few recognizable scenes, different sections of the show, and it flowed. The difficulty with Void Null is if you just put it on YouTube, it loses all of its impact. And while it is still cool, it's nowhere near as awesome as going to actually see them. So I can only hope that in some way, shape or form, they go and do bigger shows so that more people can have an existential crisis while standing up and listening to modular music and watching videos.
So you were saying it was an arts centre because last week you thought it was a pub.
Yes, so it's called the Lounge Bar, but when we got there it was a community centre, just a room in a community centre that they'd put a nice PA in.
Okay.
It was strange as a venue, but they had some all right drinks and crucially it was loud.
Was it well attended or?
No, less than 50. But it was a very small venue, so it felt kind of busy-ish.
Well, that's good. That's always good.
Yeah, lots of modcaf faces, but I think it went down really well.
Cool.
Super cool stuff.
How long was the performance?
I don't know, because you kind of get sucked in and sort of lost a bit. It's probably 40 minutes, maybe a bit more.
Okay.
So definitely longer than the previous stuff that they've done. Heat Death was more like half an hour, I think. I did enjoy, I think I've described it before, the kind of 2D thing that they did. not 2D at all, 3D thing with the dust sheet that they projected on and then the projection behind that. That was cool, and I would like to have some extra element to make it more immersive. So if they had really good control of the venue or the room that they were in, adding a bit of reactive ambient lighting might work. I was talking to my partner on the way home that it would be really cool if they could do that performance in like a planetarium in a science museum. You know, the ones where they have kind of cinema seating, but you're reclined and looking up at the big projected thing. If they could do, oh man, the void null in a planetarium, that would be amazing. Assuming their projectors are up to scratch, because it needs that crispy fidelity. Anyway, let's stop ranting. Let's wrap this one up with our usual end segmentio, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation that is not a jingle yet. Maybe one day. Pete, what have you got?
Quite some time ago on the podcast, I recommended a YouTube channel called Abroad in Japan.
Big fan.
Which is hosted by a gentleman called Chris Broad.
Yes, he is Abroad in Japan.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a pun going on there.
Love it.
He has started, most probably maybe a year or so ago, a second channel called Chris Abroad. The primary channel, Abroad in Japan, is doing very well, but I would imagine as he's doing it as a full-time job, he's trying to supplement his income by spreading the load, so to speak. And this channel tends to have things like live streams, and in some respects it can be similar to the Abroad in Japan, but other times, as I say, although it's similar content, it's a slightly different approach. But one of the things he's done recently, which is quite amusing in some respects and is featured on both channels, is that he has rented an apartment and utilized it as a studio for video production, editing, and etc. But he's also commissioned a set of set builders to build out a Blade Runner type set in the apartment, which features a sort of back alley Japanese type street with a traditional Japanese sweet cellar or sweet shop. It also has a ramen shop and a few other features, and it's quite bijou. It sits in a very small space, and it can be adjusted. The walls are movable, and he can reconfigure it, and it makes for a very wonderful background.
I just jumped on one of the videos. Obviously was a live show because it's 3 and a bit hours long. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Like neon signs everywhere, and it's kind of grungy.
It's got all the flavors, and it's got sort of bowls of ramen, but when you actually look at them, it's all fake.
Yeah, well, there's that thing they do in Japan quite a lot, is outside restaurants they have that kind of window display of, I think it's just kind of models of the
fake food
that they're
apparently
doing.
It's a thing in Japan,
and yeah,
he's got lots of it.
It's really,
it really
cool.
looks really convincing, and he's got little, what, those little kind of vaporizers they use,
a little aroma diffusory things,
so they sort of squirt out.
Yeah,
so he's got those going away, so it looks like there's pots and pans sort of steaming away. It's very effective as a pointer, or he uses it as a discussion point, but also a great place to interview people, a great place to host from. Just yeah, I mean, it's a thing to do. It's just really left field.
He's sort of reassuringly English, isn't he, a lot of the time?
Yes, very.
It's great.
Self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm. He's got familiar humour.
Yes.
I like it.
I don't know how that gels with Japanese humour. I wonder if how there's... It's strange sort of national identities. They have different types of humour. I found...
Well, for example, sarcasm rarely works in America. They just kind of... They get offended if you're making jokes at their expense.
Yeah, they were possibly... There was always that thing that they didn't really deal with irony, but I think there's quite a lot of irony in American humour these days. I did note when I worked in China, well, effectively Hong Kong, that Chinese humour is similar to British humour, and certainly in the toilet department. they have a, you know, a certain synergies, let's say, in the type of humour. It's a little bit darker in some respects. Yeah.
Imagine it'd be really good if you're learning a new language and you're getting, you know, well past conversational into, well, hopefully approaching not actually native speak, but you're competent enough that you can talk happily with anybody. It'd be so great when you don't have to try and figure out humour as well. If you can literally translate what you would joke about in English into your new language, that'd be great.
Yeah, humour's a funny thing in the way it translates or doesn't translate.
Definitely. Mostly doesn't. I think, yeah, when I was in America with one of my school friends, they had sort of a family home in Cape Cod, sort of hanging around on the beach with fellow youths, and none of my jokes landed at all.
Mm.
Not a fun way to be.
I got the impression that to a degree that humour was getting a little bit more cosmopolitan because of the cross-fertilisation, because of communication.
Yeah, lots of consumption of American media.
And vice versa. Mm. They do consume quite a large amount of UK media in America.
Maybe those people I was hanging around with just didn't.
Maybe it was a teenage sort of
maybe
thing.
Who knows?
They're into their own sort of subculture and, you know, reject anything from outside their community. I'm searching for the right word.
I don't know.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, I do actually have a recommendation.
Excellent.
I thought I didn't, but I do. Since I'm getting into my board games, there is a great channel called 3 Minute Board Games. Reviews, most of the time, around 3 minutes. There are longer videos for the kind of list videos that seem to be everywhere on YouTube these days, one of which is 10 games to start a board game collection with, which is really cool. It's a chap from New Zealand, and they're really well planned to make efficient use of the 3 minutes. Things like really quickly saying there is a solo mode, giving you the complexity, what kind of style of game it is, thematics. And so far, I have agreed with his opinions on the ones I've tried, those being Escape the Dark Castle and Azul. But yes, if you're looking for more board game recommendations, or you think, ooh, is it worth shelling out £100 on a board game? Because a lot of board games are really expensive these days. 3 Minute Board Games on YouTube. Very handy. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, as always, to Rack Addict After Hours. We'll catch you later in episode 103. Stay safe. Farewell.